The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, and this is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, September 21st, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on today's show, a new arts venture in South Fayetteville, Pilot Arts, is taking off, and Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda talks with founder Missy Gibson about what's ahead. And we also find out what's ahead for Arkansas and legal medical marijuana as the deadline passes to apply for licenses to distribute. That and more business news ahead in this week's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. First, it's that time of year when up to a half million visitors roll into Northwest Arkansas on their motorcycles for the Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue Rally. Some of them will come wearing images that some Fayetteville residents consider divisive and not representative of the values held by the city that hosts the rally. The most popular of these images, the Confederate flag. But there are others as well. Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue Executive Director Tommy Sizemore says the rally has always had restrictions in place regarding what vendors on official rally parking lots can sell.
Anything that can be found offensive, lewd, nudity, that we can ask them to either move it, its display location in the tent, you know, if it's just pushing the envelope a little bit, or if we just find it to be completely offensive, we have every legal right to ask them to remove it from the tent.
If a vendor doesn't comply with the request, they will be asked to pack up and leave. Sizemore says recently they've added another image to the list of restricted merchandise items.
The Confederate flag issue has been brought to light a little more recently the last 2 years. And so in a response to that, We've included that into the category of offensive material.
Sizemore says these restrictions only apply to official Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue lots. That includes the lot next to the Walton Arts Center, the lot where Arcega's at the Depot is located, Baum Stadium, and Arbest Ballpark. Sizemore says businesses that are part of the Dixon Street Merchants Association have also adopted the same restrictions as the rally.
So anything outside of that is between that vendor and whoever they're renting off of.
Sizemore says while they've had to ask vendors to move or remove merchandise in the past, they've never had to ask a vendor to leave. He says the vendors who come into town are understanding of the policies.
They know that when the crowds go home and when they go home, Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue still has to stay and be a good community partner.
Of course, there will be participants and visitors to the rally who bring their own Confederate flag items into town with them. Local artist Olivia Trimble says that's not the only image that concerns her. That's why she's created a separate set of images that locals can wear or put up at their homes. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with Trimble and Hannah Bailey, who's with the local chapter of the American Institute of Graphic Arts, or AIGA, about their sign campaign.
Well, so the conversation started when I posted on Facebook that I would like a wall to paint in anticipation of Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue. So we had an enormous Facebook thread where people offered different businesses and different spaces for panel installations, so like signs on panels. And it was obvious pretty quickly that it was a big thing. So Marty Maxwell Lane, who is involved with AIGA, got with me, and we very quickly decided to partner our organization. So I'm the founder of Repaint Hate, and then Marty is with AIGA. So we just decided to, work together as a team.
So AIGA is a professional membership association for graphic designers. And Marty saw the post on Olivia's wall and thought, this is the perfect opportunity for us to show what we're about. Diversity and inclusion has been really important to the chapter since we started early this year. And so we're all about partnerships and uniting the creative community. And so this was a really cool partnership that we got to be a part of.
Which aspects of Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue kind of prompted this idea?
Well, you know, we had heard from quite a few women and people of color that they felt uncomfortable going down there during the event.
To downtown Fayetteville.
You know, there are some pretty graphic, misogynistic shirts. Probably couldn't even repeat what they say on air. And then, of course, there are quite a few Confederate flags that are flown. So, you know, in Fayetteville, like, our whole thing is that we embrace diversity and inclusion. And while we are, you know, it's great to see everyone come to town and celebrate their motorcycle enthusiasm, we thought that it was important to show these visitors what Fayetteville is all about. So we can't really regulate what anyone wears or says, and we don't want to. We just want to have like a united showing for Fayetteville values.
This isn't about saying, hey, we want all the bikers out of town, right? I mean, that's not.
Absolutely. That's not what it's about at all. We know that the festival is part of the fabric of the community, and we're excited for so many people coming to town. And so the messages that we're putting out there about, you know, one of the signs says, in this town we choose love. Another one says, y'all means all. These are messages maybe not so much for people who they've decided what they're going to think, and it's a difficult thing to change what someone's decided to believe. These are messages more for those who might feel uncomfortable this week. If they're seeing a lot of messages that make them feel excluded or threatened in any way, these are another side of the coin. This is a way to encourage people who maybe feel on the edge this week.
What are the ways in which you're trying to spread the message of what Fayetteville stands for?
Well, so we have 4 yard sign designs, and those are available today for pickup at the Handmade Market and through the rest of the week. We'll have pop-up murals going up on panels around town. We have T-shirts that will be for sale that say, hate is not in our anatomy, and we'll have those at our booth at Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, and it'll be right behind the depot on the bike trail.
And I think I saw, too, you can download one of the images and also print it, go to, you know, a print like FedEx or something and
have it printed. That's right. You can go to repainthate.org and download your own sign. You can print it and hang it up in your window or take it to FedEx and get your own yard sign made.
So what's your response to people who say, why are you making a big deal out of this? You know, this event comes into town once in a while, it's, you know, once a year, it's people's right to express themselves.
Totally. People can express themselves however they want. We get to express what we feel are the values of our city. So it's a big deal because we have 500,000 visitors coming. So, you know, we just we would like to take the opportunity to show how friendly our city is.
Artist Olivia Trimble, who founded Repaint Hate, and Hannah Bailey with the local chapter of the American Institute of Graphic Arts, speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek. Both Trimble and Bailey say they appreciate the response from Tommy Sizemore, the executive director of the Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue Rally, to the concerns expressed by Fayetteville residents.
91.3 is supported by David Adams, designer, creator of fine jewelry. This season, David is featuring reticulate metals and patinas in silver and 18 karat with bezel set diamonds, plus gemstone cuff bracelets. All pieces handmade at the Fayetteville Square location. DavidAdams.com for more. KUAF is giving away tickets to the 2017 Hillbury Music Festival, October 12th through the 15th on the farm in Eureka Springs. It's a 4-day camping bluegrass music festival welcoming the infamous String Dusters, Handmade Moments, Keller Williams' Grateful Grass, and more. Winners announced Friday, September 29th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. You can register and find more information at our website, kuaf.com. Celebrating 21 years in Northwest Arkansas, Community Clinic has served as the medical home for thousands of insured and uninsured patients in Northwest Arkansas, providing health care in 14 locations, including Springdale, Rogers, Siloam Springs, Fayetteville, Lincoln, and Prairie Grove. Healthy people, healthy community. CommunityClinicNWA.org.
And ahead on Ozarks, the band Route 358 is ready to show off their brand new album, Only the River Knows, a collection with a little bit of everything.
Gosh, those are like just a genre mess,
yeah,
all over the place, because no two of them are really in the same wheelhouse of genres.
Route 358 offers previews of their brand new CD later on today's show.
After Mexico's deadly earthquake, anxiety is high in an East LA neighborhood that's home to many Mexicans.
In Texas, también tengo
gente. It's hard. Look, the business, everything is sad because no one is around, and it's because of all of the things that are happening.
I'm Elsa Chang. A tight-knit community awaits word from family affected by the quake. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon from 3 to 6 on 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. The city of Siloam Springs plans to work with the city's Chamber of Commerce to help more than 200 people losing jobs when a Del Monte plant closes. An official statement from the city indicates that the city learned of the plant closing yesterday. According to the statement, there are more than 150 factory and industry job availabilities in the immediate surrounding area right now. In all, 238 jobs will be lost with the closing of the plant. The closure comes after Del Monte Foods of California announced it's sold its Sager Creek Vegetable Company business based in Siloam Springs to McCall Farms of South Carolina. A new study from the Center for American Progress concludes Arkansas stands to lose billions of dollars under the new Senate plan to repeal the Affordable Care Act. The nonpartisan think tank used data from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and the Kaiser Family Foundation to determine 439,000 Arkansans could lose coverage. The report's author, Emily Gee, says the real damage will come in 2027, well after Governor Asa Hutchinson has left office.
So the Graham-Cassidy bill would fund subsidies for the marketplace plans, that is, the exchanges, and for the Medicaid expansion under the ACA through a block grant, which is very different from its current format, through the year 2026. However, in 2027, that funding drops to zero, with no funding appropriated for 2027 or beyond.
She says Arkansas will lose about 17% of the funding it receives under the ACA. The Congressional Budget Office says it will not be able to complete a full scoring of the bill by the time Republican senators plan for a vote by the end of this month. The United States Department of Agriculture is providing nearly $7.5 million to help fund research in the areas of child development, maternal health, and disease prevention on the Arkansas Children's Little Rock campus. The money will go toward research taking place at the Arkansas Children's Nutrition Center. That center is one of only two human nutrition research centers in the country that are dedicated entirely to exploration of issues affecting children and the only one focused on this population in a rural setting. And the Arkansas volleyball team continues to roll. Last night, Arkansas won its SEC opener, sweeping Tennessee in Barnhill Arena. Arkansas is now 11-2 overall and will host number 3 Florida Sunday afternoon at 1, again in Barnhill Arena.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. We're in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio today with Annabelle Steelman Berry. She's Publicity Chair for Cooperative Emergency Outreach. Annabelle, thanks for coming up today.
Thanks for having me. Cooperative Emergency Outreach is a cooperative of Washington County churches who seek to provide emergency assistance to residents as part of their outreach ministry.
So this could be people in between homes. This could be, I guess, youth, really anyone who is needing help?
Yes. Most of our clients are people who are subsisting from paycheck to paycheck, who encounter some sort of emergency situation, either a hospital bill, a car repair, something that just puts them in a bind. And what we try to do is provide assistance, either rental assistance, utility assistance, food, to just help them get over that hump and get back on their feet.
Is there a main location? You know, you said this collaboration between many, many churches within mm-hmm. the Washington County area. Do y'all have a locale?
Yes, okay. We are at 1649 Huntsville Road in Fayetteville. We've been there since 2013 when we moved from our Rock Street location. People come into our office. They bring basically their story. We have interviewers who will talk to them, find out what their situation is. We also have a food pantry on site where anyone who lives in Washington County south of Springdale can come in and get a 3-day supply of food. We can always use donations. We do receive funding from the churches, but we always need additional donations. food drives are great. Money is better because we can buy more food.
You know what you need the most for your pantry, exactly.
Yes, and we also have access to things like the Northwest Arkansas Food Bank and the Rice Depot, where we can purchase food much less expensively than in a grocery store. CEO is one of those organizations that sometimes people think shouldn't work, but it does because we have no budget and no staff.
Wow.
It's 100% volunteer. All of our funding, we have no budget because whatever money we get goes to our physical plant and then to our clients. So we simply work with whatever we have on hand at the time.
Annabelle Stillman-Berry, she's publicity chair for Cooperative Emergency Outreach located on Huntsville Road in Fayetteville. Annabelle, thanks so much for coming up and tell us your story.
Thanks so much for having me.
A new arts organization is taking flight in South Fayetteville. Missy Gibson, director and founder of Pilot Arts, stopped by Studio 123 yesterday to speak with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda about the new venture. Antoinette began the conversation by asking about Missy's own introduction to the arts.
I don't really remember much beyond being a third grader and being made to wear a fur coat and a terrible mustache as Templeton the Rat in Charlotte's Web. And that's where my moment started. But yeah, I started in school plays. You know, I was an Army kid, so we moved a lot. Mm-hmm. And that was a way that I kind of got into the community and the school and stuff, is just I got into theater. I did theater in the community. I did theater through my school. So that stuck with me. And then it's just something that I realized that I don't want it to be missing from my life. So I decided to go to school and get my theater degree and get my music minor. And I moved up to New York after going to school and did that for a couple years. And so, yeah, it kind of was started pretty early just through natural, like, extracurricular activities and just kind of meeting some really cool people along the way that inspired me to think, like, this is actually something you can do for a living. That's pretty neat. So that's really how it started, third grade, being a rat.
and now you're letting other children be rats in third grade.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you pay it forward.
Yeah. As the executive director of
Young Actors Guild.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
in Fort Smith.
Uh-huh. And that's something I'm still doing. You know, I've been with YAG about 11 years, and I love it because it's such a unique model for a youth theater. You know, it's free for the kids to be in shows, so we get kids from all different socioeconomic backgrounds, which I'm really passionate about, not just because that, you know, that seems like the right thing to do, but because if they didn't have that, they wouldn't have the opportunity to know they had that ability, because arts classes are expensive, dance classes mm-hmm. are expensive, singing lessons, music lessons are expensive. And through kind of being in the show process, which is what's free for them, they get to work with a music director. They get to work with musicians in the band. They get to work with a director, you know, sometimes a choreographer if the show needs one. And so they kind of get those things in a different way, and they get it for free. And we've had so many kids from YAG that ended up going and being theater majors, music majors, mm-hmm. theater education majors, choral education majors, that realized that they were actually pretty good. You know, they had a talent there they didn't know about. And so that's one of the things I love about YAG, is that it's really helping kids kind of see a side in themselves. Even if they end up being a teacher or a doctor or, you know, whatever they end up being, it kind of gives them that kernel of confidence, you know, to discover that.
Right. And YAG has received national attention. I know a couple of years ago you guys got a national award for your production of Les Mis.
Yeah. Yeah, we actually have won 19 National Youth Arts Awards.
Mm-hmm.
And which is cool, because it gives the kids, they all can put it on their resume when they're applying for college and doing other things. They can all put it on their resume, anybody that's been in their shows. And it's nice to have that. You know, it's always nice to get a pat on the back to say you're doing something good.
So doing well with YAG, so where did you decide, or why did you decide to start a new program?
Yeah, so, well, the cool thing about this is that I'm still doing YAG. That kind of satiates my youth theater
mm-hmm.
Need. I don't know if I could ever go away from working with kids. I just really, I mean, it's just something that gives back to me every day, truthfully, and watching them just achieve great things, sometimes greater than me. And I'm always, and a lot of times greater than me, actually, let's be honest. And so I get to, like, watch them grow up and become these fabulous adults and do things. And so I don't know if that's something I could ever walk away from.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still with YAG. But me personally, as an artist and a director, I've always loved musical theater. And I have, you know, I participated in Inspire Theater's Man of La Mancha that happened a few years ago up in Bentonville, and I get involved wherever there's an opportunity. But I really, I've just had really a longing to have more musical theater in my life. And then I thought, you know what? I think our community could use more musical theater. And so Pilot Arts was kind of born out of the idea that song and dance is a great vehicle for joy and for collaboration and for community. And so it just was really the right time for me to do it. And it's really neat that we found this home at Drake Field Airport. And just a lot of things have really fallen into place that I was like, you know, I've dragged my feet. It's one of those things, you know, you dream about things and you go, this would be cool one day. And finally just said, this is going to be cool today. We're going to do this today. And we're going to see where it goes.
And how did you end up at a airfield?
Well, so funny. We actually went out there initially just to look at a hangar for a venue, for a show venue. And then I was walking around and I was like, this is just such a cool space in Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. It's so neat and open, and all these old planes that are down at the Air and Military Museum, and all these people that, you know, fly in to support like the UA football, and just such kind of a neat vibe down there. Mm-hmm. And so I met with them, and they actually have a space down there that I was able to get into. And it just ended up being a great space for Pilot Arts. And the name actually was preceded the location.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Truthfully, I didn't name it because of the airport. I named it before. I named it with the idea of, you know, adventure and taking flight and taking chances and going someplace maybe that is new to you. And so it actually preceded the airport. So when the airport happened, it was one of those moments where you're like, well, that's kind of eerie and this should happen. So
meant to be.
Meant to be. Yeah.
And so musical theater, and not just for kids.
Not just for kids. So that's what's different about this, is that it's all ages. You know, it is all ages. It is more of a community theater right now. I would love for it to eventually be a professional theater. I'd love to actually pay artists. I am paying artists, but pay everybody that's involved. And there's so many great local performers. And I want to give a space for them to create. And I want to give anybody, like, I think, you know, the older we get, we tend to make our dreams something that are just something we think about or recall upon, you know, when we hear an old song that makes us think of something. But I want to say to folks, you know, you can be a dancer, and I don't care if you know a pirouette from a leap. You know, I don't care if you know technology, you know, the terminology, and if you've taken dance since you were three, come out. If you love to move, if you love to sing, if you love to connect or create a character, come out here. I don't care if you have a theater degree or have done it before, you know, come see us and see if there is a space for you that would make you, you know, be excited to be involved.
And there's a lot of movement in this first show you're putting together, Footloose.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's a dance show.
It is a dance show.
It is a dance show. It's Footloose is such a great opening show for us because number one, it's just a celebration of joy. I mean, the idea that there's this town that says, you know, dancing's outlawed, and there's just a bunch of kids that are like, all we want to do is get together and celebrate, you know, being together. And the idea of listening to young people, I think, is a cool theme, too. So, I mean, you know, why start small is what I say. You know, let's just go big. And Footloose, a lot of people have nostalgic memories of seeing the movie or even the, you know, the revamp they did in 2011. It's kind of something that, you know, a lot of people know. And so maybe that will get them in the door to come see us.
And auditions are Monday and Tuesday.
They are this Monday and Tuesday, September 25th and 26th, 6 to 8 on Monday, and 6 to 8:30 on Monday and 6 to 8 on Tuesday. And it's open to ages 9 through adult. A majority of the parts are going to go to teenagers and adults. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of smaller kids in this show. But there's going to be a live band, and the show is actually going to be November 9th through the 11th at the Arkansas Air and Military Museum, which I told Sally, who works in there, and if you've never met Sally, she's mm-hmm. awesome, and she has planes on her shirt, and she loves that place, and she is, she, you know, books all their stuff down there. But I was like, this is where it would have been. This is where a dance like this would have taken place, mm-hmm. you know, and so the fact that it's there is really, I'm really excited about. But yeah. And the thing about Pilot Arts, too, that I'm interested in that I hadn't mentioned yet is I am interested in new works. So we're going to have a mixture of maybe musicals that people know. But then we're also – I'm really wanting to, like, tap into some new voices in musical theater. I was an associate member of the National Alliance for Musical Theater for a long time. And that was something really exciting, is to watch musicals, snippets of new musicals that people were writing mm-hmm. around the United States. And I want to bring some of those here. So it's not just maybe musicals that we know. It's also bringing in some things that would be new to Arkansas, new to our community, that might excite people and tap into things that we don't maybe see as much around here.
So this life band you mentioned, is it going to be a house band since you are a musical theater?
So it is, well, so it is, yeah, it's our band. I'm calling them the Band of Pilots.
Okay.
People should say it, I should call them the Crew of Pilots. Oh. But it's just a bunch of talented musicians I've gotten to work with over the last 10 years of working in musical theater that are just incredible professional musicians. That's the one thing is the music in this show, it's like all top 40 hits. Like this album actually sold 15 million copies. Which is, for a score, you know, is kind of unique. Mm-hmm. It is unique. And it's Oscar and Tony nominated. And so it's just going to be, like, so fun to come and listen to the band and watch all the dancers and singers. I think it's going to be a great show for people to come out to.
So do any of these members of the band happen to be actual pilots?
Man, wouldn't that be something?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm still missing a musician. Maybe I should typecast him. I should be like, you know, can you actually fly an airplane? Maybe he could fly in on one of the vintage airplanes and park and then come in like the lead guitarist and start that opening riff. You've just started something, Antoinette.
Okay, I'm happy to help.
My brain, you get assistant director credits.
Excellent.
So
never had that. Allowed that to my resume.
Yeah, add away. But I do hope that people come out that, literally, like, if it even flashed, like, across, I was thinking of Kyle. I was like, he should come out for the Reverend part. But no, I mean, really, like, I want anyone that's sitting around going, I've always wanted to try theater. You know, I want it to be an unintimidating place. And theater can sometimes, you know, feel a little, can make people a little nervous. And I don't want it to be that way at all. I want it to be just an open place for people to come create with us.
Well, I hear there's cookies at the audition, so that seems not intimidating.
There are cookies at the audition, and I may even have some gluten-free ones to stay hip. But yeah, there will be cookies. Anyone that comes audition, the bare minimum you get out of auditions is a cookie. So you should come see us.
I might come just for that.
Antoinette, come. And it's cool because, we also have some classes. Mm-hmm. We are starting with a few classes, and we're doing a musical theater new works class, which is all new pieces from emerging musical theater composers. And that's a class for teenagers and adults. And then we have some classes for our younger kids. So there's something in this company for everyone.
So the auditions are Monday and Tuesday. Yes. And then classes will start the following Monday.
On October 2nd.
And you can sign up for that and for the auditions and find out more about what you need to bring to the audition at your website.
Yep, pilotarts.com. And you can find us. We are plugged into all the things. We're on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. So you can find us on Pilot Arts under almost all of those. So definitely come see us because we'd love to play.
Well, congrats on your new adventure, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
Me too. I'm excited. I hope to see you at auditions, Antoinette.
That was Missy Gibson, director and founder of Pilot Arts, talking with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. She came to the Carver Center for Public Radio yesterday afternoon.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Feed Communities and UAMS would like to remind you that health is a gift you can give year-round. 1 in 5 families in Northwest Arkansas is food insecure, and local food pantries need your healthy donations all year, not just during the holidays. Feedcommunities.org for a list of healthy food donations as well as places to give. The Alma Performing Arts Center presents Catapult Shadow Dancers Tuesday, October 3rd at 7:30 p.m. These stage and screen dancers tell stories by transforming their bodies into dragons, castles, animals, intricate landscapes, and more. AlmaPAC.org or 632-2129 for tickets.
And if you've missed past editions of Ozarks or would like to share a story you heard here with others, you can find the show and individual stories at KUAF.com and at OzarksAtLarge.com. And you can also subscribe to our podcast through free services like iTunes and Stitcher.
Year-to-date numbers in the Northwest Arkansas housing market through August indicate the pace of growth is slowing. This is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. I'm Paul Gatling. A bit of a slowdown should not necessarily be considered a bad sign, though. Mervin Jebaraj, an economist for the University of Arkansas, said the data shows a regional housing market that is, in fact, still considered hot. 2016, he said, was simply a banner year of sorts for the market, so a slower pace of growth should not be all that unexpected. Combined in Benton and Washington counties, there were 6,611 home sales in the first 8 months of the year. That's up only 1.5% from the same 8 months a year ago. The combined sales volume was $1.47 billion, up a little more than 6.5% from a year ago. Where the slowdown is illustrated comes when comparing the same 8 month period from 2015 to 2016, when unit sales increased almost 17% and the sales volume jumped nearly 29%. Jan Holland, a licensed realtor in Northwest Arkansas for nearly 14 years, also said 2016 was a peak year for the market that had been experiencing a, quote, swift and steady incline for about 5 years. She said 2017 has been a transition year to more of a leveling off market. You can find more details on this story at our website. Just go to nwabusinessjournal.com. This is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. On Monday, the state of Arkansas closed its deadline for applying to become one of the state's first cultivation facilities or dispensaries for medical marijuana. Between June 30th and Monday's 4:30 p.m. deadline, 300 applicants submitted bids to the Arkansas Medical Marijuana Commission. The five members of the commission will now review and score each application and then ultimately award five licenses to grow the drug and another 32 licenses to sell it. The recipients are expected to be announced by the end of the year. Brian Vicente, an attorney and marijuana policy advocate, was a primary author of the ballot measure in 2012, which resulted in Colorado becoming the first state to make the possession, use, and regulated distribution of marijuana legal for adults. He was in Arkansas recently and sat down with Roby Brock to discuss what Arkansas can expect with its newest industry.
Tell me what you are seeing from your wide-ranging perspective in terms of what Arkansas is doing right in terms of setting up this whole process for basically a new industry.
Sure. So, I mean, it's pretty phenomenal. I mean, we now have 30 states, including Arkansas, that have medical marijuana laws. And Arkansas, I think, has been very thoughtful in the process of how they set this up. They basically have two different state agencies that are overseeing both patients as well as, you know, creating strict controls over the businesses that will operate with them. And I think they've been really keeping an eye on the timeline, making sure that the voters who pass this are, you know, the will of them is being sort of enforced and that patients will be getting medicine soon.
I know that in states that are have a more mature marijuana industry or more mature medical marijuana industry, you have learned some things, particularly Colorado has learned some things that maybe weren't thought about beforehand. Do you see Arkansas addressing some of those concerns early on, or do you think there'll be some additional things that will come along that people maybe hadn't thought of?
Well, fortunately, Arkansas does benefit from a number of other states that have passed these laws over the last 20 years. And I think they've been thoughtful in crafting regulations that do important things like tracking marijuana plants from seed to sale, you know, making sure that there's appropriate security at these facilities, allowing local communities to have the zoning power to say, you know, this is the right area for these particular stores or not. And so I think they're coming at it from the right way.
When we watch the September 18th deadline approach for the application for cultivation centers, dispensaries, other parts of this, are we going to see everything from amateur to professional to super professional, or what are we going to get in terms of a hodgepodge here?
Sure. Well, I do think there's a lot of national interest in, you know, helping people move forward in Arkansas and get these businesses established. I know there's a lot of, you know, really successful Arkansas medical professionals and business people looking at this as, you know, not only a opportunity to make money, but also a way to help patients. So I think there will be a wide spectrum of folks coming at this, but we need to keep in mind what really matters, and that's getting patients, you know, the medicine they need and making sure that medicine is appropriate in terms of dosage and things of that nature.
A big issue that has been surrounding not just Arkansas but other states is it's against federal law for some of these banks to basically set up bank accounts to handle some of the money that goes through the medical marijuana facilities. Lots of talk about how this is going to be kind of changing for everybody. Hawaii came out this past week, said they're going to go cashless now with their marijuana industry. What's the future of the cash, the payment process for medical marijuana?
Sure. I mean, this is definitely an important issue because, you know, we're going to have these facilities in Arkansas, and we want to make sure there's not, you know, cash, you know, roaming around, that it's being banked in a proper way, that it's being transparent in terms of how these transactions are taking place. And so Arkansas needs to take a hard look at that. Hawaii has taken a little bit of a lead on this. They're moving towards, with their medical marijuana their law, they're moving towards doing sort of a cashless, almost credit card style payment. And I think that's something, you know, no matter where you're at on this issue, you believe if the law passed that people, you know, these businesses should have access to banking. It's safe, you know, it's a safety issue, it's a transparency issue, and so it's something being tackled head on.
Are you an advocate that the federal banking laws ought to change to kind of open all this up, or do you think it's kind of ripe for, you know, the Bitcoin kind of culture to come in and develop a new type of currency for medical marijuana?
Yeah, it's interesting. So we live in a wild time where we have medical marijuana legal in 30 states, but illegal at the federal level. Now, the feds have said that they actually will not interfere in state laws like in Arkansas. And they've actually said that banks can work with this industry. They've just created a lot of barriers in terms of reporting requirements and things of that nature. So banks themselves have been kind of hesitant to get on board. But I do think as banks realize that this is going to become quickly a multi-million dollar industry in Arkansas, that they'll take a hard look at actually working with these businesses.
Full confession and disclosure here. I was the White House Skype reporter that asked the Trump administration for their position on medical marijuana versus recreational marijuana, and got the big response that the Department of Justice is looking at all of this. What are you worried about where the Trump administration may go?
A bit, yeah. You know, it's interesting. On the campaign trail, President Trump stated that, you know, he supported the rights of medical marijuana and he thought it was a good thing. And then he got into office and appointed Jeff Sessions as the attorney general. And Jeff Sessions has a long history of being, you know, essentially a drug war proponent. And so thus far, the signals from the administration have been they're going to leave states like Arkansas alone, let them fulfill their state laws around medical marijuana. And we, you know, we'll kind of just have to wait and see how that dynamic plays out.
That's Brian Vicente, a marijuana policy advocate, discussing Arkansas's newest industry with Roby Brock. You can find more coverage of the startup medical marijuana industry on our sister website at talkbusiness.net. We'll be right back.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. And OneCom. OneCom, providing voice and data solutions that adapt to today's demand with tomorrow's technology. Communication tools that integrate mobility with the desktop and merge wired networks with the wireless technology. More at one-comm.com or 479-715-8800.
Finally today, still on the healthcare beat, and the number 162. That's the number of students who participated in the inaugural White Coat Ceremony held by the Arkansas College of Osteopathic Medicine in Fort Smith. Held last Saturday in the Fort Smith Convention Center, the ceremony formally marks a student's transition into the medical profession. The first class of students began their studies in August. The school is the only Arkansas-based four-year osteopathic college, and when fully operational, is expected to serve about 600 students when all four classes are full. That's all the time we have for today. For daily reporting on regional, state, and national business and political news, remember you have two options. Visit nwabusinessjournal.com or our sister website at talkbusiness.net. I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
The band Route 358 will help downtown Springdale usher in autumn tomorrow night. They'll provide the live music at Shiloh Museum of Ozark History's Barn Party. It'll be a beginning of sorts for the band, too. They'll officially release their new CD, Only the River Knows, tomorrow night. This month, Derek, Jody, Jade, and Grant Mears came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk about the brand new CD that includes songs with great narrative titles like Watch It Burn, This Town Again, and Lord Forgive Me.
Gosh, those are like just a genre mess all over the place, because no two of them are really in the same wheelhouse of genres. I never thought about it from that standpoint.
A little bit to have a pattern to them, a little bit of commonality.
Well, let me ask about Lord Forgive Me.
Don't you crave for me. Don't you shed a tear. Cause it's hope.
Lord Forgive Me came about. I was watching, flipping through television, and The Green Mile came on. And the original idea from Lord Forgive Me came from watching that film, even though when the song came out, it really didn't follow that film at all. But that idea of somebody on death row and they come to the end of their, end of their time as they're waiting execution, and that's when finally there might be a hint of remorse. So I was thinking of someone who might be a little bit remorseful, but still might not be for what happened. And so the whole story is pure fiction. That just came
turned
out
into
of,
an interesting banjo riff.
This came out of this, had this banjo riff that hit, and just a song of just pure fiction about this soul that's on death row awaiting lethal injection, and he goes back and tells the story of he was basically betrayed and ends up killing his, it's a happy little banjo tune. He ends up basically killing his significant other and her lover and burying them in the woods.
Did any of the songs change in any way after you were in the studio? For you, or did you kind of go with the plan?
Only the river did.
Only the river changed has kind of gone. It was so new when we brought in the studio. I think we completed that song maybe like a few days before we went into studio with that. And that one, for me, I know I did a lot of tweaking vocally on it while we were in the studio just because it was so new. I never really was set on how I could pronounce some things and stuff. And when we got there, I think it became more shaped just from being in the studio and having to do it multiple times. And it evolved through that. And I know the mandolin part for me a little bit shaped up. Anyway, it kind of cleaned up more in the studio than it did before we got there.
Yeah. And I think, that, like Jade said, that song was so new when we went in there. And what was really neat with that one is Nathaniel Stone, who has Stone Ridge Recording that recorded our album, Nathaniel really kind of latched onto that song and the album overall, but he really kind of latched onto that song, and it turned out that he was actually working on a Nature Sounds film, because he's a hiker, a Nature Sounds album, because he's a hiker, and he said, hey, what if we had some audio clips of a river flowing through the track,
and it turns out
I was hiking in the Buffalo River and recorded these, and so some of that stuff got put into that one. So that one we had no idea when we went in
where it would go,
and it really evolved as kind of we jokingly refer to it as our artsy track. That's our artsy track if there was one on this CD.
Soul, an evil blow.
It became the title track because how we evolved as a band.
Yeah, this one is very significant to us because this is actually our first truly co-written song. Mm-hmm. Usually it's Derek, or Dad, as I call him, because he's my dad. he, you know, will make something up and bring it to us, and we'll go, we're the worst critics in the world, too. I mean, we'll be straight up rude and go, no, that was dumb. That's not a good idea. or you know, that I hate that. Don't do that. Or, like, let's not do that. So it was different because we've been going to a lot of these festivals that are like songwriting festivals, and so I was kind of inspired by that. And so I was just playing around on my mandolin one day and came up with this riff, not ever thinking in context of it being a song. And we picked it up as a whole band. We were all there, and we kind of started building, oh, well, what if we added another chord here? What if we did that? So it started as a melody. And then the next day, Dad came in and said, hey, I have lyrics to what we wrote yesterday. And that was the first time it kind of realized to me that, oh my gosh, we're songwriting together. And so it was this whole kind of evolution of us finally writing together for the first time. And so it's a very significant song in that way.
So the first two songs we've talked about do have somewhat literary origins. I know you mm-hmm. said it was the Green Mile movie, but of course that was Stephen King.
Stephen King book.
Before that, Intoxicating, does that come from that?
Intoxicating has got absolutely no literary origin whatsoever.
I think Grant should type in on that one.
Yes.
Well, so. I mean, Derek's composition of Intoxicating, and he always pawns it off on the younger generations and their tendencies for relationships, but I think it's kind of broad scope. You could see all generations doing this activity. And I don't know, Derek, you word it so well. I want to hear your spin on this.
Well, I know where it came from. It came from one of our stories. I was going to say, being the daughter of a songwriter, you can never come home and say anything without it becoming a song. There are so many instances from my childhood where they've become a song and adulthood where they become a song. But this one is actually loosely based upon a friend of Grant and ours, or Grant and mine. And we've always for a long time gone like, what's going on with them? Like, we can't tell their relationship what's going on, and just kind of following them from friendship to relationship and back and forth.
I woke up on the kitchen table, and as soon as I am able, I'm gonna find my clothes and ask myself why. And then I pick up that bottle, and I wallow in all my sorrow. Why do I fall for you every time? Not sure how it keeps coming to this. One drink leads to more than one kiss. Just when I think I've got you out of my life,
Kickoff is at Shiloh Museum of Ozark History. That's on the 22nd. Route 358 stays busy. You can go to the website or Facebook and find out where.
And looking way ahead, a big one that we're very excited about is in December. Actually, December 2nd, we're playing Meteor Guitar Gallery in Bentonville, which will be a big, big one. And we're trying to work on a collaboration maybe with another local band. And so we'll have more information on our website and on Facebook.
And in October.
The Folk Alliance.
Folk Alliance.
Yeah,
we got on.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Out of 150 submissions for the Folk Alliance in Iowa, we were number 14.
One of 14
who will be doing a showcase.
And how that festival kind of works is they have, they shut the whole conference down for two nights of these official showcases. And then they have several private ones and this and that. So you get a chance to connect with lots of
vendors
and venues and house concert promoters and media, radio, and that type of thing with it. So we're really excited. That's our first trip to a Folk Alliance. We threw it in there and we threw in our stuff and were shocked, like, oh my gosh, we got in.
That's great.
We got in. And so here we go.
Route 358 is Grant, Jody, Jade, and Derek Mears. They talked to me about their brand new CD, Only the River Knows. inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. They'll officially release the new CD at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History Barn Party tomorrow night in downtown Springdale. The party starts at 6 with an all-inclusive jam session, and then Route 358 will begin playing at 7. It's all free. The band will also be at the Forge in Bentonville Saturday night, beginning at 7. And you can find out much more about them and the new CD at the Route 358 Facebook page or Route358.info.
KUAF has been raising funds all during the month of September in preparation for our on-air fundraiser, which begins next Monday. Because of the support of KUAF listeners, we have raised more than $32,000 toward our overall goal of $150,000. These are vital funds needed to pay for the programming you listen to and rely on every day. Make your gift now so we can begin the on-air fundraiser with as much money raised as possible. Give at KUAF.com.
Walton Arts Center's Starlight Jazz Club Series presents Hunter Tones, Saturday, October 14th at 8 p.m. Melding jazz, funk, soul, R&B, and rock, this horn-driven band from New York is known for defining their own musical path and collaborating with artists including Alan Stone, Snarky Puppy, the Glenn Miller Orchestra, and others. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets. The Jones Center is hosting Springdale's annual Downtown Runaround Saturday, October 7th. It's a one-mile fun run and 5K and 10K distance run, including an after party, pancakes, and fun for all ages. Registration and information at thejonescenter.net/downtown-runaround.
A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Paris. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. We are going to end today's show with music from the band Vintage Pistol. They will be at George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon Street tonight, tomorrow night, and Saturday night, a three-night run at different times at George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon Street. You can get all the times at vintagepistol.com. And then later, Saturday, October 7th, they'll be at Slaughterpen Park in Bentonville. This is the band singing There's a Flame, recorded at the Carver Center for Public Radio. Have a great rest of your Thursday.
It's all about